A Short Account of the History of Mathematics by W. W. Rouse Ball. John Wallis, 1616 through 1703. John Wallis was born at Ashford on November 22, 1616, and died at Oxford on October 28, 1703. He was educated at Felsted School, and one day in his holidays, when 15 years old, he happened to see a book of arithmetic in the hands of his brother. Struck with curiosity at the odd signs and symbols in it, he borrowed the book, and in a fortnight, with his brother's help, had mastered the subject. As it was intended that he should be a doctor, he was sent to Emmanuel College, Cambridge. While there, he kept an act on the doctrine of the circulation of the blood, and was said to have been the first occasion in Europe on which his theory was publicly maintained in a disputation. His interest, however, centered on mathematics. He was elected to a fellowship at Queen's College, Cambridge, and subsequently took orders, but on the whole, adhered to the Puritan party, to whom he rendered great assistance in deciphering the royalist dispatches. He, however, joined the moderate Presbyterians in signing the Remonstrance against the execution of Charles I, by which he incurred the lasting hostility of the Independents. In spite of their opposition, he was appointed in 1649 to the civilian chair of geometry at Oxford, where he lived until his death on October 28, 1703. Besides his mathematical works, he wrote on theology, logic, and philosophy, and was the first to devise a system for teaching deaf mutes. I confine myself to a few notes on his more important mathematical writings. They are notable partly for the introduction of the use of infinite series as an ordinary part of analysis, and partly for the fact that they revealed and explained to all students the principles of the new methods of analysis introduced by his contemporaries and immediate predecessors. In 1655, Wallis published a treatise on conic sections in which they were defined analytically. I have already mentioned that the Geometrie of Descartes is both difficult and obscure, and to many of his contemporaries to whom the method was new, it must have been incomprehensible. This work did something to make the method intelligible to all mathematicians. It is the earliest book in which these curves are considered and defined as curves of the second degree. The most important of Wallis's works was his Arithmetica Infinitorum, which was published in 1656. In this treatise, the methods of analysis of Descartes and Cavalieri were systematized and greatly extended, but their logical exposition is open to criticism. It at once became the standard book on the subject, and is constantly referred to by subsequent writers. It is prefaced by a short tract on conic sections. He commences by proving the laws of indices, shows that x to the 0 power, x to the minus 1 power, x to the minus 2 power, etc. represents 1, 1 over x, 1 over x squared, etc. That x to the 1 half power represents the square root of x, that x to the 2/3 power represents the cube root of x squared, and generally that x to the minus n power represents the reciprocal of x to the m power, and that x to the pq power represents the qth root of x to the p power. Leaving the numerous algebraical applications of this discovery, he next proceeds to find, by the method of indivisibles, the area enclosed between the curve y equals x to the m power, the axis of x, and any ordinate x equals h, and he proves that the ratio of this area to that of the parallelogram on the same base and of the same altitude is equal to the ratio 1 to m plus 1. He apparently assumed that the same result would be true also for the curve y equals ax to the m power, where a is any constant and m any number positive or negative. But he only discusses the case of the parabola in which m equals 2 and that of the hyperbola in which m equals minus 1. In the latter case, his interpretation of the result is incorrect. He then shows that similar results might be written down for any curve of the form y equals sigma ax to the m power, and hence that if the ordinate y of a curve can be expanded in powers of the abscissa x, its quadrature can be determined. Thus, he says that if the equation of the curve were y equals x to the 0 power plus x to the 1 power plus x to the second power or x squared plus and so on, its area would be x plus 1/2 x squared plus 1/3 x to the third power and so on. He then applies this to the quadrature of the curves, y equals x minus x squared to the 0 power, y equals x minus x squared to the 1 power, y equals x minus x squared to the 2nd power, or square, y equals x minus x squared to the 3rd power, etc., taken between the limits x equals 0 and x equals 1, and shows that the areas are respectively 1, 1/6, 1/30, 1 140th, etc. He next considers curves of the form y equals x to the minus m power and establishes the theorem that the area bounded by the curve, the axis of x, and the ordinate x equals 1 is to the area of the rectangle on the same base of the same altitude as m is to m plus 1. This is equivalent to finding the value of function 1 over 0, x to the 1 over m power dx. He illustrates this by the parabola in which m equals 2. He states, but does not prove, the corresponding result for a curve of the form y equals x to the p over q power. Wallace showed considerable ingenuity in reducing the equations of curves to the forms given above, but as he was unacquainted with the binomial theorem, he could not affect the quadrature of the circle, whose equation is y equals x minus x squared to the 1 over 2 power. Since he was unable to expand this in powers of x, he laid down, however, the principle of interpolation. Thus, as the ordinate of the circle y equals x minus x squared to the 1/2 power is the geometrical mean between the ordinates of the curves y equals x minus x squared to the 0 power and y equals x minus x squared to the 1 power, it might be supposed that, as an approximation, the area of the semicircle function 1 over 0 x minus x squared to the 1/2 power dx, which is 1/8 pi, might be taken as the geometrical mean between the values of function 1 over 0 x minus x squared to the 0 power dx and function 1 over 0 x minus x squared to the 1 power dx, that is, 1 and 1/6. This is equivalent to taking 4 square root 2/3, or 3.26, as the value of pi. But, Wallace argued, we have in fact a series of 1, 1/6, 1/30, 1 140th, and so on. And therefore, the term interpolated between 1 and 1/6 ought to be chosen so as to obey the law of this series. This, by an elaborate method, which I need not describe in detail, leads to a value for the interpolated term, which is equivalent to the formula shown below. The mathematicians of the 17th century constantly used interpolation to obtain results which we should attempt to obtain by direct analysis. In this work, also, the formation of properties of continued fractions are discussed, the subject having been brought into prominence by Brucker's use of these fractions. A few years later, in 1659, Wallace published a tract containing the solution of the problems on the cycloid which had been proposed by Pascal. In this, he incidentally explained how the principles laid down in his Arithmetica Infinitorum could be used for the rectification of algebraic curves, and gave a solution for the problem to rectify the semi-cubical parabola x to the third power equals a y square, which had been discovered in 1657 by his pupil William Neal. Since all attempts to rectify the ellipse and hyperbola had been necessarily ineffectual, it had been supposed that no curves could be rectified, as indeed Descartes had definitely asserted to be the case. The logarithmic spiral had been rectified by Torricelli, and was the first curved line other than the circle whose length was determined by mathematics. But the extension by Neal and Wallace to an algebraical curve was novel. The cycloid was the next curve rectified. This was done by Wren in 1658. Early in 1658, a similar discovery independent of that of Neal was made by van Hoeret, and this was published by van Schooten in his edition of Descartes' Geometria in 1659. Van Hoeret's method is as follows. He supposes the curve to be referred to rectangular axis. If this be so, and if xy be the coordinates of any point on it, and n be the length of the normal. And if another point whose coordinates are x, eta, be taken such that eta is to hn as to y, where h is a constant, then if ds be the element of the length of the required curve, we have by similar triangles ds as to dx equals n as to y. Therefore, h ds equals eta dx. Hence, if the area of the locus of the point x eta can be found, the first curve can be rectified. In this way, Van der Raat affected the rectification of the curve y to the third power equals ax square, but added that the rectification of the parabola y square equals ax is impossible since it requires the quadrature of the hyperbola. The solutions given by Neil and Wallace are somewhat similar to that given by Van der Raat, though no general rule is enunciated and the analysis is clumsy. A third method was suggested by Fermat in 1660, but it is inelegant and laborious. The theory of the collision of bodies was proposed by the Royal Society in 1668 for the consideration of mathematicians. Wallace, Wren, and Huygens sent correct and similar solutions, all depending on what is now called the conservation of momentum. But while Wren and Huygens confined their theory to perfectly elastic bodies, Wallace considered also imperfectly elastic bodies. This was followed in 1669 by a work on statics, centers of gravity, and in 1670 by one on dynamics. These provide a convenient synopsis of what was then known on the subject. In 1685, Wallace published an algebra, preceded by a historical account of the development of the subject, which contains a great deal of valuable information. The second edition, issued in 1693 and forming the second volume of his opera, was considerably enlarged. This algebra is noteworthy in containing the first systematic use of formulae. A given magnitude is here represented by the numerical ratio which it bears to the unit of the same kind of magnitude. Thus, when Wallace wants to compare two lengths, he regards each as containing so many units of length. This perhaps will be made clearer if I say that the relation between the space described in any time by a particle moving with a uniform velocity would be denoted by Wallace by the formula S equals VT, where S is the number representing the ratio of the space described to the unit of length, while the previous writers would have denoted the same relation by stating what is equivalent to the proposition S1 is to S2 equals V1 T1 as to V2 T2. It is curious to note that Wallace rejected as absurd the now usual idea of a negative number as being less than nothing, but accepted the view that it is something greater than infinity. The latter opinion may be tenable and not inconsistent with the former, but it is hardly a more simple one. End of chapter. Read by Leonidas for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.